We're talking about our diet here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and there isn't a single pandemic diet, if you will, to shed those pounds. But can I get a witness here? It's hard not to snack your way through the day when working from the kitchen table at arm's reach from the pantry. And now that the pandemic has crossed into 2021, the issue of quarantine weight gain has become a serious health issue. Have you gained weight since the pandemic started? What is the biggest culprit and what are you doing about it? 800-642-1234. Becky Kirkenbush is a clinical dietitian at Watertown Regional Medical Center. She is president-elect of the Wisconsin Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Becky, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
What is the conflict here? What is it about the pandemic that is causing this weight gain?
Unfortunately, it's a complex, multifactorial issue. I'm not sure I can pinpoint just one main factor. However, I think stress is a very big component, as well as that leads to anxiety, which then can lead to coping mechanisms that include eating perhaps unhealthy foods or unhealthy amounts of food. So I think the stress, the disruption in our routine, the limitations of going out, having to stay home, and isolation, those are all big contributing factors to weight gain.
So what I'm hearing here is almost like this ripple effect that is going over our entire life. Why do we tend to eat more when we're stressed?
Some of it has to do with hormones. We do have appetite hormones. One that helps us, control our appetite and stop eating, and then one that kind of tells us, hey, you're not full, you need to keep eating. And some of our comfort foods are high in calories, high in fat, and they make us feel good. They taste good. And so it's kind of a perpetual, you keep eating these things, you feel good temporarily, and then unfortunately that happiness goes away and then you eat some more. I think a lot of us are also raised to maybe use food as comfort and coping. We do associate foods with happiness and joy, but some people eat when they're stressed and some people don't, so it can work either way.
What about proximity to the kitchen when so many people are working from home? It just is so easy to get up and get a snack and not realize really what you're doing.
Correct. I tend to advise people to first look in themselves, more of an awareness. How are you eating? Why are you eating? And what are you eating? And how does that make you feel? So you're exactly right. With this remote learning, remote working from home, it's very important to separate your work from your kitchen. So if you can go someplace else to do that work, just being out of the proximity of the refrigerator and the pantry can help you because you're not always seeing the junk food or the foods, to take a little break and quick nibble on something. So I think, first of all, just getting a different environment, putting yourself in an office or a living room away from the kitchen helps. Perhaps you need to put maybe a timer or some time limits on when you can go into the kitchen so that you're not getting up every hour to grab a snack. Maybe you tell yourself, okay, I can't go into the kitchen before 10 a.m. That's, of course, after you have breakfast. But just so that you know that you're having some self-awareness of why you're eating and when you're eating.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Becky Kirkenbush. She's a clinical dietitian at the Watertown Regional Medical Center. She provides nutrition consultations, educates patients on therapeutic diets. Taking your questions about the diet you're on, what you're trying to eat now, and why, join in at 800-642-1234. Becky, you're in a clinical setting. What do patients ask you about most right now in the pandemic in terms of their nutrition?
I think weight loss is still very forefront in everyone's mind and thoughts. How can they lose weight safely, but also more of an impermanent nature, not temporary? So, when people are stressed or pressed to lose weight, they do turn to fad diets, which I don't endorse or promote. That doesn't lead you to long-term weight loss. It doesn't educate you on the emotional aspects and the behavioral aspects of eating. So I do touch upon weight loss quite a bit and how to get started with weight loss.
there has been so much job loss and furloughs in the pandemic. How do you try to help people, or what do you tell them when they're trying to stretch that food budget, live on less when it comes to what they spend at the grocery store?
Yes, unfortunately, we've seen food insecurity just skyrocket over this pandemic. I tell people, please look into community resources, look into food pantries, look into school meal programs, look into congregate meal sites. You know, even if you haven't utilized these resources before, now is the time to do that. Otherwise, looking at very shelf-stable pantry items can be helpful, things that won't expire or go bad before you have the opportunity to use them. So looking into the pantry, you know, choosing oatmeal, you can have that for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. You can use that when making items such as meatloaf as a binder. You can use that into making granola bars, using things such as peanut butter or a nut butter of your choice. You know, that is something, again, that you can use in multiple different ways. Using some, whether that be canned chicken, canned salmon, or canned tuna, those are healthy proteins.
Mm-hmm.
And protein does help fill you up. So I tell people to eat your protein item first before you eat the rest of your meal. So those are just some tricks.
Yeah. What about beans and rice? Because beans can be quite economical.
Excellent point. Yes. I do encourage people, now is the time to experiment since we are at home more. You know, get yourself in the kitchen trying new items. So a lot of people may shy away from beans. But black beans, legumes, lentils, chickpeas, those are all very economical sources of protein and fiber, and they're plant-based. So very wonderful options to start eating at least just a couple times a week if you're not used to it at all.
Some people have heart failure, diabetes, trying to work around these very difficult medical conditions. How do you determine what your patients' eating habits should be when they are dealing with diabetes?
Correct. So with diabetes, I tell people you do not have to go out and buy special diet foods or eat a completely different meal plan from your family. With diabetes, for general guidelines, it's how we would want everybody to really be eating, including more vegetables and fruits, trying to get whole grains into your diet, you know, switching from white rice to maybe brown rice or wild rice, and just trying to eat at regular times throughout the day. Sometimes that alone, including a breakfast, is the first major step I'll have my patients, you know, implement into their diet.
So don't be skipping those meals. You want to, you know, you don't want to go 4 or 5 hours without eating.
Right. And that doesn't mean you should be having, you know, huge meals every 4 hours. It could be when I talk about eating a snack. Snacks can be 200 calories or less. Usually we want a protein and a carbohydrate. So maybe a yogurt with some oatmeal on top of that or some granola on top of that, peanut butter and apples. You know, something as simple as that can really tide you over, give you a boost of energy so you're not relying on a quick candy bar fix or another cup of coffee.
Clinical dietitian Becky Kirkenbush, our guide to losing weight, eating healthy this year. Do you have a New Year's resolution to lose weight in 2021? How is it going so far? What are your biggest challenges and weaknesses? What keeps you motivated and moving forward? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Becky Kirkenbush here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about our food choices and eating better this year. It is our diet on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There's a theory that seems absolutely plausible. It goes like this. Not going to the workplace means there's no long commute, which makes space for exercising and cooking healthy meals. How has it worked out that way for you? If not, how do you turn it around, especially in the middle of winter when outdoor exercise presents its own challenges? Join in on your diet questions, 800-642-1234. We have clinical dietitian Becky Kirkenbush from Watertown Regional Medical Center for the hour. Becky, we heard from Dina from Ontario, called in, couldn't stay with us. Dina said some people just can't afford to buy more nutritious food, and that can make it more difficult to stay healthy. And Dina wants to know, you know, we talked about shelf-stable foods are economical, but what fresh foods are more affordable?
That's a really good question. And I think it is a little bit of a misconception that eating healthy has to be expensive. If we take a look, again, just assessing what we have in our homes right now, in our pantries, in our refrigerator, and how much maybe you're spending on items such as, whether it be beverages like soda or chips, those items, you know, instead take a look at when you're at the grocery store, how much a bag of apples might cost, or how much you know, like a jar of peanut butter would cost, and then how far that actually stretches compared to those other items that we might sit and eat in 2 days versus something would take a week to eat. Also, when you're at the grocery store looking to see what the unit price of items are and comparing that can save you money, so that you're picking the lower cost item per, again, unit price, maybe not overall. Some people buy in bulk, and that is helpful for them, too, because then they can have a lower cost. Again, and that stretches the food dollar.
Yeah, and also, buying in season as well.
Yes, yes, buying in season, and then trying to incorporate more plant-based items, as you mentioned, beans, lentils, legumes, either putting half of that in your recipe, replacing the meat portion, or doing a few more plant-based meals per week, because meat is very expensive protein source compared to other items that are plant-based.
Let's bring in Rita now in Middleton. Hi, Rita.
Hi, good morning. I'm listening to your show. I'm just holding it at a grocery store, and I just want to let you know that when the pandemic started and I was hearing about, you know, how people were going to be gaining weight, I just really, and I stepped on the scale and I was my highest I ever had been. I just really concentrated on, I'm not going to let this happen to me. One thing is I'm retired, so that's a wonderful thing. I get up and I walk every morning, and I am doing the fasting. I hate to call it diet, but that's what they call it. So I quit eating at 6:30 at night, and then when I get up between 5:30 and 6:30, I have my cup of coffee, and then I don't eat again until I eat a good breakfast sometime between 10:30 and 12. And my body's really adjusted to that. I don't feel the hunger that I used to feel. And then I try to eat as healthy as possible and quit at 6:30. And I've lost 25 pounds in a year.
Wow.
Good for you, Rita.
Yeah, I also stretch. You know, I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. I've been doing stretching and just some floor exercises. And I'm going to be turning 70 this year. And I just want to remain healthy.
Rita, good thank you. Yeah, good for you. Thank you so much for that. And, you know, Becky, sometimes fasting works for people, but it also can be pretty difficult for some people.
Right. And I think Rita makes a good point. She's found something that works for her. I can give some general guidelines and recommendations, but really everyone is so unique. Their lifestyles are so individualized that she is able to find something that, again, has led to weight loss success for her. But she's also incorporating sort of like set meal time. She has a very routine schedule, which I think is very helpful. She also wants to remain functional and active. So she does the stretching. She does the walking. So I think she's found several components of her lifestyle that changes that have led to success. Intermittent fasting can be different depending on the time frames that you're using throughout the day. So it does work for some people. For others, it might not be something I would recommend, such as those with diabetes who do have to monitor their blood sugar.
We're talking with Becky Kirkenbush, our guide to maintaining a healthy lifestyle and weight. She's a Wisconsin clinical dietitian who provides nutritional support for patients. Taking your questions, 800-642-1234. Brian is joining us from Menominee, Michigan. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. I'm 52, and during the pandemic, my lifestyle changed dramatically. So I'm looking for general guidance on the correct amount of protein, carbohydrates, calories, and everything for someone at my age. Like, that's really what I'm looking for.
We missed your age, or I did. I couldn't quite hear it at the beginning. What age, Brian?
52.
52. Okay. Becky, go ahead. Yeah.
Sure. I hesitate to make any very specific nutrition prescription or recommendations since I haven't met you and fully, heard about your story. So I do recommend speaking with a registered dietitian who could give you more specialized nutrition advice. But while I have you, I can recommend looking into the Mediterranean diet. It's one of the most heart-healthy diets to follow. And it has not only more of a plant-based approach, which is eating vegetables, fruits, and whole grains. It also includes eating meals with families, being more physically active, those types of tips for you. I think the activity is a really important component. You can have what you think is a perfect diet, but if we're not being physically active, especially as we age, it's very hard to keep the weight gain off. We can't certainly eat the same amount of calories that we maybe could when we were in our 20s and 30s as we age.
Becky, why does the Mediterranean diet have such staying power? Why is it so popular?
I think it's because it's, first of all, some very general guidelines that we might already be doing to a small degree, but it's more encouraging you to, again, eat more vegetables and fruits. Those are things that we can do.
Mm-hmm.
They recommend upping what we normally eat to 7 to 10 servings a day. So that might take some work for people to get to that amount. Switching the grains that we already eat, like breads, cereals, and pastas, to more of a whole grain. So again, it's not cutting out a specific food or food group, which is helpful. I don't see the Mediterranean way of eating as a temporary diet or an extreme change to your eating. It's definitely something that you can follow and live with long term.
What does the diet say about oil? Because I know it kind of pushes you toward olive oil. When you open your cupboard, what mm-hmm. oil should we reach for?
Right. So it does focus on olive oil as being the primary source of added fat because it does provide that monounsaturated healthy fat, which has been shown to lower our total cholesterol and our bad LDL cholesterol. Nuts and seeds also contain that healthy fat too, so they do recommend that as part of the diet. So olive oil is great because it's versatile. You can use it in salad dressings, in sauces, and dips. You know, canola oil is another oil to have on hand because that can be used, it has a higher smoking point, so it can be used more for cooking.
Okay. Madeline is with us from Franklin with a question about olive oil. Hi, Madeline. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. I am 80 years old, and I was diagnosed with arteriosclerosis. The calcium count is quite high. And I have been using olive oil, thinking that it would be okay for me. But I'm wondering, it's still an oil. Is it okay to continue with this? I do use it in my salad dressing, and lately I've been using sardines that are in olive oil. I just don't know if I'm doing something healthy for myself or if I should cut that out.
The first thing I tell people is we're not adding a fat to our diet, but replacing it. So have you used olive oil in as a replacement for other maybe more unhealthy fats in your diet? So,
well, I've always been health conscious, and I have stayed away from fried foods. Or fast foods or anything like that all of my life. And from what I understand, this is more of a generic thing. I'm sorry, more of a hereditary thing.
Hereditary, yeah.
Yes.
And I'm just kind of confused on the oils.
Sure. So I tell people when you can, make sure you're only using the oil when it's needed, like you mentioned, in making your own salad dressings, which is an excellent way of utilizing oil. Salad dressing bought at the grocery store is really rather expensive in comparison to what you can make at home, as well as it has added salts and sugars. So you're doing a great job there. Sticking with a tablespoon as your serving size is really, I think, the second point. Oftentimes, portion sizes can get a little large or out of control with certain items, especially when it's something liquidy or something pourable. So just checking that. And then when you're use, do you use it for baking, or how else do you use your olive oil?
Well, I don't bake. I don't eat sweets, but my husband and my son do, and when they do, I will buy sweets, which I know that has palm oil in it sometimes. I try to avoid that.
I was just thinking, if you are baking, you can do other substitutions that are heart healthy, like using Greek yogurt or applesauce instead of oil altogether. So that's a way of omitting that portion. If you're making eggs in a pan, you could certainly just get a really good nonstick pan and a spray instead of using the oil. So I guess you're doing a good thing by using olive oil instead of other oils, just watching how much you're using it.
Becky Kirkenbush, she's with us as we discuss diets, losing weight, eating healthy. She's a clinical dietitian at Watertown Regional Medical Center. Parents, how are you ensuring your kids are eating a healthy diet? What's that nutritional balancing act like with your kids in the pandemic? What concerns do you have about your child gaining weight and decreased physical activity? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back with Becky Kirkenbush right after this news update here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing weight gain in the pandemic, how to shed those extra pounds. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Health experts say people working at home may get into a habit of mindless eating. We're confronting issues of emotional eating, stress eating, and in my case, a lot of mindless noshing. Are you disciplined about your food choices? What healthy meals do you enjoy cooking and eating with your family? Will your kids eat the healthy meals you prepare? Have you relied on frozen pre-cooked foods in the pandemic? Share your diet, your tips, 800-642-1234. We have clinical dietitian Becky Kirkenbush, who is with us for the hour. Mary Kay is now here from Kenosha. Hi, Mary Kay. What would you like to add?
Good morning, ladies. I Google what nutritions I need in my food, my vitamins, for my menus and my pantry foods. That's the first thing I do every month. Then I eat more fish, beans, whole grains like quinoa, flax, chia. I make veggie burgers with leftovers, vegetables. You eat your main meal at lunchtime. That's between 12 and 3 p.m. Up the snacks, more nutrition, okay? You have more dried fruit, chocolate, milk, and some smoothies. You take your vitamin, you get more sleep, you drink water, and of course there's relaxing time. Now the indoors, you can exercise for 35 minutes, and outdoors, go for a walk for an hour, and all these things work.
Oh, Mary Kay, thank you so much. That was quite the laundry list, Becky. A couple things that struck me. One is we haven't talked about fish, and another thing, smoothies.
Right. Mary Kay had some really great tips and things that, you know, we should all consider. And just picking one or two of those, incorporating that into your daily eating can reap very positive results. So she's done great research and doing her homework. So you had mentioned smoothies, and that's a great thing to touch upon. Smoothies can be a wonderful meal or snack, depending on how you make them. And kids especially seem to enjoy them. So I do talk about using, you know, frozen fruit, again, or using fruit that maybe, such as bananas, that might be turning, you know, bad soon, as we say. You can also put some vegetables in there. And I don't like to say that you're hiding the vegetables for the children. However, they're there, but you don't taste them. Like frozen spinach works really well. I've even put frozen squash or sweet potatoes in smoothies, and that also works really well. And then using whatever, you know, milk, whether it's skim milk or almond milk, you know, a milk of your preference. You could use some Greek yogurt for protein, and just blending that all up. And sometimes it takes a little trial and error to find what tastes best for you. I do advise, you know, making sure you do get protein, obviously the carbohydrates in the fruit, and then also some healthy fat in there so that it stays with you and you feel satisfied. So avocado works really well for a healthy fat in your smoothie.
And smoothies can be just so refreshing. And
right.
I mean, they can be fun and refreshing, and there's so many different ways you can go with them.
Right, right. And if you have leftover smoothie, you can put it into ice cube trays and freeze that for a snack for later.
Oh, I haven't tried that. That's great. What about fish? How much fish should we be eating?
So, you know, a portion size of fish, about the size of a checkbook, because it does shrink when you're cooking it. And, you know, 2 to 3 times a week would be a great goal for people. However, if this is brand new to you eating fish, you know, just getting it once a week. And for some people, it could be, again, like the canned salmon or canned tuna that they start using more often. You know, we recommend getting it canned in water instead of oil. And then to rinse, you can rinse out the tuna or salmon to get some of that salt out of it from the canning. And you can use that in sandwiches or on salads, things like that.
When we're looking at fresh fish in the grocery store, do you have any advice on what fish we should be selecting and why?
The healthier options are, again, tuna, salmon, mackerel, sardines, you know, basically fish that you're going to eat and that you're going to use right away and not just have it sit and spoil in your refrigerator. And then more or less the cooking method, if you can bake that, you know, broil it. Those are the healthy ways of using it where you don't have to add fat to it, like a fish fry.
Let's look for a moment here at the kids. Childhood obesity, such a huge problem. Why are we seeing kids gain weight in the pandemic when they're going to school virtually at home?
So, again, a disruption to their routine. You know, children, as well as adults, thrive on order and routine. They also do really well when there are scheduled movement breaks. So I know in schools they take timeouts and they get the wiggles out, as well as there's gym class and recess. And when they're at home, they might not get all that activity that they normally would. And that really does impact their weight. And then also at home, again, just the availability and the proximity to food and snacks. And maybe they're home alone, and so they have, you know, free rein to be eating when they feel like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How can we as parents get our kids to eat healthier? Do you have any tips as we juggle so much?
The first thing is to include the children in on the grocery list, the meal planning, you know, what you're purchasing. If they have some ownership and some say in that, they might be more likely to eat those items. And then also, whatever you do purchase, whether that's fruits or vegetables, make sure that they can see it. So if you have fresh fruit, put it in a bowl on the counter. It's more likely that they will walk by, see that, and grab that than if they would have to go into the pantry or go into the refrigerator and look for it.
How do you also make sure that the portions they're getting are correct and correct for their size?
So I am a fan, when you can, to get individualized pre-portioned items like string cheese or yogurt cups, because then you do know you're one and you're done. Other ways would be making sure that children, maybe they have their own plate or their own cups that are smaller in size. They shouldn't be eating the same amount of food as adults. They should be eating, you know, smaller amounts, but maybe more frequently throughout the day. You know, snacks are okay for kids. They do need that to keep their energy up.
We're talking with clinical dietitian Becky Kirkenbush, who provides nutritional support for patients in southeastern Wisconsin. She's president-elect of the Wisconsin Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, taking your questions about diet and what your goals are in 2021 with the foods you eat. 800-642-1234. Becky, we talked about the Mediterranean diet, but there is just so many diets out there. Whole 30, Atkins, Dukin, the keto diet. You know, what should we be looking at when we are considering a specialized diet?
So I often tell people to assess, what is your goal? Is your goal to feel better, to reduce your sodium intake? Is it for weight loss? And then also to think about, is this diet something that I can maintain long term? Because the last thing we want is to be what you call yo-yo dieting. That actually can be very detrimental to a person and their metabolism if you're losing extreme amounts of weight only to gain it back to then try and lose that again. You know, we'd rather avoid that on your body. So signs of a fad diet that I tell people just really look out for would be it promises extreme rapid weight loss. diets that do result in really large amounts of weight loss fast tend to be a lot of water weight that's lost at first.
Mm.
You know, and then once you start eating the foods that you were supposed to be excluding, you do gain that weight back. So, and that can lead to just a really bad cycle of feeling bad about ourselves, or, you know, again, giving up and choosing, you know, not to even try to eat healthy, which is not what we want. If the diet doesn't include physical activity, that's a bad sign, because you do need nutrition changes and increased physical activity for weight loss to be successful. If there's no guidance or food education, that's also an issue.
So no guidance or food education, meaning that you don't know why you're eating what you're eating.
Right.
You're just following a very specific plan.
Right. You're exactly correct there, because then when you do have questions about, can I eat this food or that food, or how do I go out to eat and maintain a healthy diet, you have no resources there. And so, again, you're more likely being set up for failure than success.
Are these crash diets, so to speak, are you prone to overeating after a diet and then the weight comes back?
Correct. Right. When you are told that you can't have something, it's same as with kids, the adults are the same way. If you're told that you cannot eat this particular food, or you have to exclude this entire food group, that's when you tend to want it. And then when you are allowed, I say that in quotes, allowed to have it again, we might lose control. We have a hard time regulating how much we're going to be eating of that, because your body kind of goes into starvation mode, where you're like, well, I didn't have this for so long. What happens if I can't have it again? I'm just going to keep eating and keep eating.
You know, so many people, you know, had the New Year's resolutions perhaps about diet or exercise. And certainly at this point in the year, it's kind of coming to that point. Are you going to stick with it or not? Is it important for people to set goals in terms of their health, or when it comes to weight loss, what is doable for weight loss over the long term?
So I think it is a great idea to have goals that have some sort of accountability to them. So we talk about SMART goals, something that's very specific and measurable, and that has results. That so that could be something, though, instead of weight loss, perhaps you're talking about, I want to be able to eat, you know, 4 servings of fruits and vegetables per day. So increasing those items will lead to, you know, perhaps weight loss as a secondary, you know, result there, because you're decreasing your snacking and other processed food while you're increasing your fruit and vegetable intake. Or it could be something as simple as, I'm going to increase my water intake, which then may result in decreased sugar sweetened beverages. So you're excluding calories there, but you're doing a good thing by, you know, maintaining or increasing your hydration with water.
Clinical dietitian Becky Kirkenbush is president-elect of the Wisconsin Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Are you a dietitian or a nutritionist? What do you recommend we eat to lose or maintain weight? Or can you suggest activities we can do at home? Share your tips, your story. Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Becky Kirkenbush here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with clinical dietitian Becky Kirkenbush. She's helping us eat better, stay healthy. Losing weight is challenging in the pandemic, right? Schedules are all topsy-turvy as more of us work and go to school at home, where the lure of the nearby fridge and that pantry, it is quite powerful. Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Becky, let's look at caffeine, beverages like soda, beverages like beer. What can our choices around beverages do to our diet?
So it's easier to consume calories through beverages or in liquid format and not even realize you're doing that. Like you had mentioned, alcohol or beer. Again, those are, you know, whether it's wine, beer, liquor, those are not only empty calories, so they don't provide any nutritional value. But after a glass or two, you tend to want to eat more or make maybe poorer food choices. So your sense of regulation seems to go out the window. As for soda, you know, a 10-ounce, 12-ounce can of soda can have up to 10 grams of sugar. And, you know, we wouldn't sit down and eat that much sugar by the spoonful, but it's very easy to drink that and continually sip on that throughout the day and not realize that you could be easily consuming 500 calories a day just on the beverages alone. So the first thing I sometimes tell people to do is look at what they're drinking.
Should we be concerned about our caffeine intake?
So a little caffeine can be great. It can be a way of waking you up and giving you that little spark in the morning that you need. But you're right. If you're relying on caffeine all day, especially in the afternoon, just to get through your workday, that can be a problem. Caffeine can disrupt your sleep, and we all know that good sleep is important for feeling well and for regulating your, again, your hunger hormones. So if you're not getting your 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night, you can, again, feel hungrier the next day or need to rely on that sugar surge that you get through beverages or candy or through caffeine.
You know, Becky, the reality is about 70% of Americans are either overweight or obese. Why are obesity rates so high in our country?
That's a really complex question with lots of factors. I think one could be that we have, you know, bigger is better. We've supersized our food options, our plates, our utensils, everything is larger than it used to be decades ago. It could be less physical activity, whether, you know, we've just become very a society of convenience. You know, we don't even have to get up to turn the TV channel anymore. We're not perhaps walking places that we might have, again, years ago. We're taking the car every place, or everyone has a car. So I think those could be two factors there. And then just maybe the availability of food. You know, in some places, people don't have grocery stores. They have to rely on convenience stores to get basic, you know, food items, too. And that makes a difference, you know, where you're purchasing your food. Prices, quality of food, those are all a factor in weight gain.
You know, sometimes life gets in the way. It gets so difficult to make a freshly prepared home meal. And the lure of throwing in that frozen pizza, it is really strong. How do you work through that?
First of all, I tell people, please do not feel guilty. We are all doing the best that we can, especially during this time of pandemic. And I, too, eat frozen pizza.
Oh.
So there is not that problem there. It's just how much and how often are you doing it? Or if you are making that frozen pizza, you know, I try to add more vegetables to that. So I'm a big fan of frozen vegetables. Not everything has to be fresh, especially this time of year. You know, so if you can just boost the nutritional value of some of those convenience meal items, that can be helpful. Also, you know, it's okay to do batch cooking. Maybe you're cooking a whole box of rice and you're going to freeze some of that or refrigerate it to use later. Or I'm a fan of one pot cooking where I'm going to throw everything in the pan or the pot or the sheet pan and let it all cook together and it'll be done hopefully within 30 minutes. And that just makes things easier.
When you look at fiber, why is it so important to have us increase our fiber intake?
That's a great question. So fiber is a plant item. We find that in fruits and vegetables and whole grains. And fiber helps us feel full. So number one, it can help us eat less because if we're eating high fiber foods, the fruits and vegetables are usually lower in calories. We eat those and we don't eat as much as everything else. Two, fiber can also help lower our cholesterol levels, so our unhealthy cholesterol levels, which can lead to, again, heart disease, risk for heart attacks and strokes. And then fiber can also help balance or manage our blood sugar levels. And what I mean by that is when your blood sugar spikes up and down, almost like a roller coaster, that, again, can lead to changes in appetite, eating, weight maintenance, or weight gain.
We're talking with clinical dietitian Becky Kirkenbush. She's our guide to eating healthy. She's president-elect of the Wisconsin Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Still questions, still time to talk about the question you have about your diet, 800-642-1234. Becky, you know, how do we keep ourselves motivated to staying on track to get the exercise, to get the sleep, to eat healthily and still do all the other things that are providing quite a bit of stress in our lives with work, with family?
Great question. I tell people, narrow it down. Be very specific. Don't just say that you want to eat healthy. Have a very specific goal in mind, saying I want to cut out my soda, increase my water intake to 6 glasses a day. Tell people about your goals. That, again, sharing your goals, maybe they want to join you and support you in that, or at least it holds some accountability so people will ask you how you're doing. Also, tracking what you're doing. So if that means that you need to write it down in a journal to, again, hold some accountability. Sometimes if I'm going to be journaling and I know I'm going to have to stop and write something down, I might think twice before I do it or eat it. So that helps. And then also, again, you know, if you have a speed bump, if you fall, you know, off on your goal, to just try it again, not just call it quits and feel like you're a failure or that you can't do it. I mean, this is a continual thing. Healthy eating is something that I think we have to just remind ourselves to do every day. It's not natural for some of us.
On the topic of journaling, how do you do it without it becoming either so burdensome, but also very practical in being accountable to what you're actually eating?
So some people prefer the actual pen and paper method. Maybe they carry a journal with them. Some people might use an app on their phone, like MyFitnessPal. So it's sort of finding the way that works for you. Some people might do it specifically after each meal, or some will do it at the end of the day when they have a little time to relax and reflect on what they ate and why they ate it. But it can be a good tool, again, to just assess your daily intake.
How long do you suggest people keep those journals up?
You know, I would say at least try doing that for 3 to 4 weeks. If it works for you and then you want to continue doing that long term, that's great. But I think it takes at least that long for us to see patterns and habits, why we're eating what we're eating and how does it make us feel when we're doing so. So I'd say at least 3 to 4 weeks if you can.
We have less than a minute left. What can we change today, right now, in our life to help our bodies and potentially lose weight tomorrow?
I know I've said it before, but I know my goal for this year is to increase my water intake. One, being hydrated can help you feel more energized. Two, sometimes we confuse hunger and thirst, so we might eat when we're actually just thirsty. And three, sometimes when we want to reach for a snack, really we can just reach for something to drink, and that'll help curb our appetite or occupy us so that we, you know, realize we don't even want that snack, really. And then that can also help us decrease, again, those sugar-sweetened beverage intake. So that's what I would recommend starting with. And then from there, you know, after a few weeks where that becomes an actual behavior, you can reach your goal.
Becky, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Becky Kirkenbush is a clinical dietitian at Watertown Regional Medical Center and president-elect of the Wisconsin Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.